Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. Sabres prospects are on ice today to get ramped up for the Prospects Challenge that begins this weekend with Marty and Brian. Marty, how are you? And what is your big storyline, if you will, to start the Prospects Challenge week?
Well, listen. Before we jump into the Prospect Challenge, I want to say that I really appreciate those on social media, especially X yesterday, that when the NHL Network put the Goathead logo and says, who is the first person you think of? It took a while for anybody to say my name. And then somebody said, no Marty Perron in there? So I have to appreciate that it started a little bit of a flow of my name being thrown in there after one person, maybe like after 500 names had been dropped, they said, hey, how about Marty? But our good friend at Sabres Fun Stats put a picture of Jeff Gilson out there as the first name he thinks
about. I would have thought of him before you, I can assure you of that.
Well, you know what? It's a good picture with the green Easton stick and the flow.
He played in the playoffs.
With Boston.
No, Buffalo.
With us too. Yes, you're right. He was one of the three regulars. Let's just put it this way, because with Pacher, Dougie Janik, and Roy Fitzpatrick, Brian Campbell, Jeff Gilson, I don't think Hank was Hank hurt. May have been Tony Lundman that was with
them. One of them had a broken arm. I'm pretty sure it was Hank.
Hank was hurt. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like in Game 7, Jeff Gilson was one of our regular against Carolina in 06. It was that's why you may be thinking of him. But anyway, Jeff Gilson is not a prospect. Jeff Gilson would not be on the ice with the prospect this afternoon. But when it comes to the prospect challenge, I think there is I don't want to build it as to say there's an attitude going into it. But the Sabres are basically saying we have one team. They brought in 13 forwards and 7 defensemen. Mm-hmm. Most of their guys are going to play all 3 games. Last year, they had 15 forwards and 8 defensemen. So you're going to have, you know, guys that are going to miss a game here and there. It's not going to happen much this year. As you're playing Friday, Saturday, Monday, let's go. You're going. And Kulik and Roseanne and Austin and Wahlberg and those guys are all there. It's the attitude of saying, you know what? Let's start off running. Let's set the tone. Something that I feel Kevin Adams was disappointed last year, not with the prospect because it's the prospect, but just the tone of camp, especially with the main guys, not really like getting off to a good start in camp and the season. I think that attitude seems to have shifted this year and saying, we're going to have our main guys. They're going to be there at the prospect tournament. They're going to play. Let's go. That's the way we hit the ground running.
Do you think that the players think the reality has shifted, that there's fewer spots for them as they enter Prospects Challenge?
I think that's a very solid point, Duffer, that there is few spots. And it's like, hey, you know what?
Is that reality, though? Like, should they think, I would say they should never think that, but that's just me sitting here all hopped up on cold medication. But whatever, you should never think that way if you have a chance.
If you're in camp, you have a chance. You have a chance.
Right.
If you come into camp, you have a chance. Now, I remember showing up to my first training camp thinking, I'm better than everybody in the goalie room. That included Dominic Hasek. And I was young and naive, but There is something to be said of, I am fighting for a spot, regardless that it is 1 spot, 5 spots, or 10 spots. I'm fighting for it. And a lot of fans are going to say, oh, wait a second. Yuri Kulik has already played 2 seasons in Rochester, and he's playing again in Prospect Challenge. Isaac Roseanne is playing again in Prospect Challenge.
Well, he's no Graham Clark.
You're right there. We have seen Graham Clark multiple times, and there's other names that we've seen with other organizations coming in that played a ton of prospect challenges. But Ryan Johnson, for example, he played 41 NHL games last year. Mm-hmm. He's going to be in the prospect challenge. So to me, the attitude is, look, when you put the jersey on, that it is prospect challenge, that it is preseason games, regular season games, whatnot, we want you to dominate. We want you to go out there and really make it hard on everybody else. Yuri Kulik is going to get a chance to play. If he goes in 3 games, plays at a high level, all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, is Sam Lafferty or Peyton Krebs or Obi Kubel or those guys' job in a lesser convincing place because Jiří Kulik is pushing. There's the opportunity for Jiří to make that happen.
Does Krebs have a contract?
No, and that was a question we got on X late last week. Like, and what's happening with Peyton Krebs?
Well, he's a dad.
He's a dad. Yeah, I think that probably took precedence. Priority on the list. He probably called his agent less. And I've been there calling my agent 2-3 times a day saying, hey, what'd you think about this morning? Same as yesterday. At lunchtime, did you guys talk? No, not yet. Dinner time, what about this afternoon? We changed the text or whatnot. Maybe it's dropping down to one call a day. Mm-hmm. But Peyton is on the ice working out, skating with the guys. I'm sure they want to get it done. But right now, there's a lot of bodies, even including those guys in Prospect Challenge that will be part of the main camp. There's a lot of bodies that are fighting for spots on the main roster. And if you're Peyton Krebs, you're probably starting to, I would think, worry a little bit that you don't have a contract.
Yeah, I would think the same. I just don't quite understand it. I mean, Nick Robertson got his done yesterday. Different players, different situations. Happy birthday, Nick Robertson. Newsmaker Nick, we call him around here. He's somehow gets in the cycle every day.
He kept us going. Nick Robertson, thank you for a summer of good headlines.
Summer of Nick.
I'll tell you, Duffer, the mentality of the player and the agents when going through something like Peyton Krebs is going through right now changes from the perception from everybody around. Like, I held out until October the 1 year. Dominic Hasek is the goalie with the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres have first-round pick Mika Noronen there to back up Dom. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they going to do? Like, cave to my every demand? Like, my agent and I are like, I had 19 wins last year. I saved the season because Dom was hurt, and I got us to the playoffs and this and that. And Darcy Regier's thinking, like, probably not, we're not telling him that, but he's thinking, if I have Marty, I have Marty. If I don't have him, doesn't matter. It doesn't change my team. I have Dominic Hasek. I'll fill in with Mika Noronen, no big deal. But my mentality was, they need me. They need me. I'm a big part of this. And I think you're in your own bubble. And I think Peyton Krebs probably finds himself a little bit in that bubble thinking, hey, you know what? I was part of the Jack Eichel trade. I'm a first-round pick for Vegas. I've been in the league now for a little bit. I'm going to get an opportunity. Okay, the perception around there is around, you know, everywhere else is, hey, it's not a guarantee. There's a lot of competition there. There's a lot of players that are maybe pushing you out of there. So the inside and outside perception when it comes to these negotiations always are very different.
So when do you think it gets done?
I think at this point, I think if Peyton, and I don't know that, you know, official, nobody's really talked about it, but if Peyton is willing to take a 1-year deal at what his qualifying offer may have been, I think that gets done before camp. But if Peyton Krebs is looking for a 3-year deal and wants, you know, a bump in pay and all of this, it's not going to get done because you have other players that are going to fill in that spot because you went and acquired 6 different guys to fill in your bottom 6 this year. You know, between McLeod and Obi Kubel, Lafferty, Malenstein, you've got guys that are going to come in. You got Zach Benson, who, you know, going to be second-year player that made a good impression last year, and maybe anybody from the Prospect Challenge that's going to make an impression that Benson did like Benson did last year. I feel like the only way out, and probably what Kevin Adams is waiting, is for Krebs and his agent to say, yeah, we'll take the 1-year deal and we'll go with that. That's really the only way it gets done, I think, before camp.
Obviously, it can't really be about money, right? It's more about term.
Well, obviously, I don't think Peyton Krebs is going to sign a 3-year deal at $1 million. I think Peyton Krebs may look at a 3-year deal.
But why would the Sabres want that right now?
Probably just because $1 million, if it doesn't work, you can put that player in the minors. It doesn't cost you anything on your cap, and you have somebody signed for 3 years. I think the Sabres may be willing to say 3 years, $1 million or $1.2 million or whatnot, just to say under the threshold of what AHL, you know, money accounting against your cap would be. Or it's easy to move or to throw into a deal because you say, hey, you got two more years of Peyton Krebs at $1 million, $1.2 million or whatnot. But I think the easy one here is to say, let's get it done for 1 year. Let's see if you can give us something to really feel like you are part of this core moving forward. If not, I mentioned the young guys, the Kulik and the Roseanne and, you know, but the Lucas Rusek and the Brett Murray and those guys, like they're all going to be looking for an opportunity just like Peyton Krebs would be if he's in camp.
Right. Rusek obviously on a one way this year. And when you look at the list of players that are here for Prospects Challenge, and then was not planning to do this exercise, but, I don't plan to do a lot of exercise. It's probably why I feel like crap. I don't know, but like, look at the names at the Prospects Challenge and think, and then throw Krebs in, you know, just like looking at it, you know, who has opportunity here? How much damage could a really great Prospect Challenge / training camp from one of these players, how great an impact could that have on Krebs' future place within the Sabres group of 12 or 13?
Well, you know what? I'm looking at the list on MSG right now, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that it's 12 minutes in and we talked Prospect Challenge. I haven't mentioned Konsta Alenius' name yet. That's another guy that...
I think it's more relevant in the Krebs discussion.
That's another guy that should be really mentioned, that if there is a, hey, let's take a flyer on a guy. Let's give this out of, you know, the box kind of like chance to a guy, it would be Konsta Alenius. And knowing that he'll come over to North America, adjust to the style, but hey, let's surround him because we have a roster spot that we thought was going to get filled up by Peyton Krebs that may not be filled up by Peyton Krebs. And all of a sudden, instead of a 19 in that spot, it's 94. It's Konsta Alenius that is going to get an opportunity. And maybe it's only to play fourth line center, get him, you know, 10, 12 minutes a night. You get him used to it. But it's a reward if the guy performs and gives you everything you want. You have that wild card. It's like you're sitting on that ace that is like, hey, there's a spot open. Why not we try him there and give him that opportunity? I think there's a valid, valid point right there with Konsta Alenius.
So if they're, like for Alenius, I don't know. Here's a different way to look at it. Among the five first rounders, and especially the group up front, who should feel the most confident or optimistic that he could actually get more games with the Sabres in the course of preseason and early season?
Who should in the group of guys at the prospect?
Yeah, challenge? Like if you're lining up Alenius, Kulik, Roseanne, Wahlberg. Like, what are you thinking when you think of that as far as...
I think the name that comes out is Yuri Kulik. And one of the thing, and this is maybe not the way of looking at it, but the Sabres are starting in Czechia. They're starting in Prague. Yuri Kulik is represented Czechia at the World Championship the last 3 years. And maybe that's an incentive for him to say, look out. Watch me in Prospect Challenge. Watch me in the first couple of preseason games if I have the opportunity, and I'm going to bang right through that door because I want to play in front of my family, my friends in the NHL, and it may be the only opportunity. I think that Yuri Kulik may have that chip on his shoulder coming in this year, knowing it's his third pro year. It's really technically his first year of his contract, his entry-level deal, because the last two seasons he was able to slide, which is something that Konsta Alenius has available to the Sabres too. His contract could slide this year. If he plays in Rochester, it doesn't count as the first year. It would slide this year. So that's something that Jack Quinn and J.J. Peterka had happen, something that you know, Jiří Kulik has had happen. That may be something Elenius will have happen as well. But I think Jiří Kulik would be, I mean, I think of myself, if in all my years playing, they're like, hey, we're going to play regular season games in Quebec City in front of your, you know, Montreal was down the road, but Quebec City would have been like my hometown. I would have been lookout. I would have come in and just, you know, plowed, bulldozed right through anybody that got in my way because I would have wanted to get it done.
Well, so then who does Jiří do that at the expense of?
Well, I mean,
is he really going to just be a fourth liner to start the year? I don't mean to phrase it that way, obviously, but
it's not bad to be a fourth liner in the NHL. But if you're Jiří Kulik, you have bigger aspirations than to be a fourth liner.
It's not even that. I'm looking at it more with where the team has focused, and you know, they like what they've added in the fourth line. And I'm just, again, it's shifted over the last couple of years, going from opportunity to then reality. And the reality is they still haven't made the playoffs. So they shifted course to try to address a concern that they had, which is the bottom six, of which now I think, because of how it's constructed, might, I don't want to say block, because that was never where you were planning to, you know, play a first round pick anyway. But don't you feel like it's complete? Like,
Zucker's here.
So like Zucker's got to play.
But does Zucker has to play? Does he have to play in the top six? He doesn't really have to play in the top six.
Even if he's in the top nine, is Jiří bumping him out of the top nine? No.
Well, if Jiří Kulik has the type of camp and the type of showing at the Prospect Challenge and the type of showing early in camp that makes me think, hey, we got to give Jiří a longer look. We're taking him to Europe. We're going to play him against Red Bull. And who knows? Maybe he fits in our top six. I think if Jiří Kulik is on your opening night roster, opening afternoon here, but it'll be a night in Prague. If Jiří Kulik is on your opening night roster, he's in the top six. I don't see Jiří Kulik being a fourth liner for, you know, just to give him that, hey, he's on our roster. No, he could be in the top six. And
so is he taking Skinner's spot?
Exactly. Could you play him with Thompson and Tuck? Absolutely. Could Jiří Kulik perform and produce with Thompson and Tuck? Yes. I've always been very, very strong that I think Peterka, Cousins, and Quinn have to start together. Even though J.J. Peterka played well with Thompson and Tuck later in the year, I really feel strongly in Cousins in the middle of Quinn and Peterka. And Zucker could easily play with Benson and McLeod on a third line. So now that bumps Greenway down to the fourth line. But is Greenway better suited in the fourth line anyway and play some penalty kill minutes and be more of that one? So, yeah, I could see where Kulik, with a good showing, a great showing, can say, I'm worth top 6 minutes, especially early in the season, and then you can make an adjustment. And that's also if Krebs is not there, because if Krebs is there, then it adds another player into the mix and may scramble things.
In what way?
Well, in the way that your roster numbers now are different, because you would have 13 forwards already. And if Jiří Kulik is, you know, the 14th forward, which you probably start the season with 14 forwards, 7D, and 2 goalies, your 23-man roster, who else is coming out? And I'm not worried about...
Who else?
No, who else? Who else? Nicolas Aubé-Kubel. Who else? Like, you know, I'm not worried about Sam Lafferty coming out or Aubé-Kubel coming out. And maybe it's, you know, Krebs.
Well, it's not just coming out. It's so they might have to go on waivers, which they've been through in their career.
They've been through in their careers. But I don't think that those new incoming players are bound for Rochester. I'm just saying maybe they're the extras to start the season, right?
But you can only have so many extras if Jiří makes the team. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They already have extras right now without even considering Jiří in there.
You have one extra. If Krebs signed, you have one extra. And if Jiří makes the team, all of a sudden that's two extras that you need to sit out. That's not considering Lukáš Rusek, who's on a one-way deal moving into next year. So now maybe that's three extras. Yeah, it becomes complicated, and now it becomes more of a, what are we putting as a priority? Is losing a player through waivers or the chance of losing a player through waivers more important than having Jiří Kulik being up with the team if he performed well. I would always say if your top prospects, your top end guys perform better than the rest, they're on your team. Zach Benson last year, he performed better than the rest. He was on the team. That's as simple as that. You don't have to complicate things. You don't have to think, oh, well, what if he plays his 10th game, then he burns a year of his deal? Who cares?
Yeah, he's I don't think anybody worries. Yeah.
You know, he makes the team.
In hindsight, though, was Benson as much a standout because the preseason just wasn't that electrifying for a lot of others?
In hindsight, I think that's, again, something that you look at the training camp last season and it really fell flat. A lot of top-end players fell flat in training camp. It showed in the first... It really showed throughout the whole season. They never got themselves going intensity-wise, urgency-wise, anything, right? Through training camp and the regular season. There was one guy that stood out. It was Zach Benson. Zach Benson was showing like dog on a bone mentality. I'm working hard. I'm winning one-on-one battles. And then you're like, wow, he should be in the NHL. Now, maybe that would have been a different story if everybody would have had that urgency inside of him, that level inside of him. And all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, well, Benson is a good story, but he's not standing out as much because everybody else is at a very, very high level that we don't have to worry about it. I think it was maybe the perfect scenario for Zach Benson last year to have shown that desire and everybody really being a step back. But if you're jumping on Lindy Ruff's bandwagon and saying this training camp is going to be different. Mm-hmm. I think even Zach Benson has to show another level. He has to show another level because he may not play top nine. He may be fourth line to start the season if he doesn't show another level.
Do you know the last Sabre rookie forward to score 30 plus in a season?
Last Sabre rookie forward. Alish Kotelik.
I don't think Al ever got 30.
Probably not his rookie season, but yes.
Donald Odette scored 31 times.
Wow.
in 63 games in 91-92.
I was in the right mind thinking it's a long time ago. I needed to go farther than that.
Why do you think I brought it up?
Alish Kotelik never scored 30 in his career in a season. See? He went.
I said that instinctively without even looking it up. Aren't you proud of me?
Yeah. See, for me, I saw his shot in practice enough to think that guy should have scored 30 plus.
Yeah, it's, I
know. And he never did, which is disappointing. I'm disappointed in Al Kotelik, the pride of Prague.
Looks good, though. Looks good.
Oh, a lot of LIGs. LIGs look in glass. Every time Al Kotelik got back to the bench, he looked in the glass behind the bench, fixed his helmet, make sure the hair was good, and then he sat down. There was LIGs. That's what we called them.
Just prior to Odette's 30-plus goals in 91-92, Ray Sheppard had 38 back in 87-88. Wow. But as a precursor to history, was edged by Joe Nieuwendyk for the Calder Trophy, and of course Joe would win the Conn Smythe at the expense of Buffalo in 1999. So
yeah. Yeah. And look, scoring 30 as a rookie in the NHL is hard. It's not easy, right? Even Donald Odette only got the 30 goals in the season one more time in his career. And that was with the Atlanta Thrashers, where he got to 32. I've got his hockey DB in front of me. You know, he went from 31 to getting hurt the next year in 92-93. He scored 12, then 29, 24. Like he was a good goal scorer, but getting to 30 is hard. Yuri Kulik, playing with Tage Thompson and Alex Tuck, get to 30? I mean, J.J. Paterka got to 28 last year. J.J. was technically not a rookie, but, I mean, he was a young player in the NHL. Mm. I think Yuri Kulik playing with Thompson and Tuck, and the fit being that let's raise our level, could very well go to 25 and maybe push 30 if it all, you know, kind of sink in together.
Well, we have a team of the day. That is Tampa. That is coming up. We barely touched the defense on the Sabres Prospects Challenge roster. That's good because we can save that for tomorrow. Unless you have an urgent question pertaining to that, you can hit us up at Sabres Live.
I have an urgent question for you tomorrow. Is that I don't know how to say.
Will I be here?
Maybe.
TBD.
I don't know how to spell Komarov's first name. I always have to look it up. Like I have a really hard time spelling his name.
I go back to 2 years ago, development camp. And we were told that he goes by Sevi. So Komarov, I've never once looked at how to spell his first name. And I just write S-E-V-Y every time with Komarov. Or I just write Komarov because I know I'm not going to say the whole thing.
You know that Let's Play That Hockey skit from Saturday Night Live when Brady Shea's character turns around and he says, S-K-J, that's a no. Like V-S-E, that's a no. Like that's how it starts. And I can't say it, so I'm going to stay away. I'm going to say Sevi. You're right. Sevi Komarov. Yeah.
Well, he's too old to play in the Hockey Fest this weekend, but he will be taking part in the Prospects Challenge. And Fan Fest is presented by Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. And as you know, it is a full day of fun from 10 to 6, hockey games, skills challenges, player appearances, autographs. And it all runs in conjunction with that street hockey tournament, Hockey Fest, which is just outside of Alumni Plaza. You can get all the information at sabres.com/fanfest. Again, it runs from 10 to 6. Now, important to note, not only if you're playing in Hockey Fest, but if you're coming down for Fan Fest, you're thinking, okay, well, where are they playing the games? They're playing them on Perry Street, right? So that means you're not going to have traffic access there. There's also road closures at South Park right now, and this makes for a concerted, you know, effort on all parts to try to make it easier for people to get there. So free parking will be available in the surface lot, which can be accessed at Perry and Baltimore or via Michigan Street. So keep that in mind. It's all part of FanFest this Saturday. We're back after this with Team of the Day.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Former Bolt Ross Colton is celebrating his 28th birthday today. So that leads us into the Lightning as our team of the day.
What a transition. I love it.
I am nothing if not up to speed on hockey birthdays now, thanks to this show.
You love it. And that's probably the first thing you do in the morning. And you're like, oh, hockey birthdays. Let's look at it. Who's on the long list? I think this is very refreshing because I never remember. I remember some birthdays, but I never remember. I have to put them in my calendar. I have to write them in. And I have to look ahead. I know my kids and stuff like that. My parents.
Oh, well, that's good.
But yes, when it comes to other people, I know JP Dumont's birthday because it's April Fool's, but that's about it. Like,
is that right?
Yeah, April Fool's Day. Every year just stuck right. A big fish in his
yeah well we wouldn't back. Expect it to rotate unless it was end of February, but
Simon Gagné is February 29th.
He's a leap,
so that's
baby,
another
yeah.
one, so that's yeah. a leap year baby, so yes.
Okay, so just to unexpectedly bookend this part of the show, who does Peyton Krebs share a birthday with once again?
Wayne Gretzky.
Yes, so we know that that's January 26th.
But so. I don't know Wayne Gretzky's birthday, so it doesn't matter.
January 26th, yes.
Okay, good. I know Sidney Crosby's birthday. That's an easy one.
Oh, I can't believe producer Jeff didn't force us to go in this direction the other day with stupid obvious headlines. Crosby, optimistic, a deal will get done. Oh, my God.
Is Sidney Crosby signing an $8.787 million deal with
Tampa? There's our transition for Team of the Day. His next deal happens.
Well, the question is, will Crosby retire at Pittsburgh Penguins? And if he doesn't, would Tampa Bay be the location, right? Gensel is there now, so why not follow your teammate, the guy that Crosby almost cried on camera last year when they traded him away? He was so disappointed, so disheartened. Maybe Crosby ends up in Tampa at some point. I still don't.
The Stammer would take great offense if an older Crosby ended up replacing him there at some point.
Stammer would say, I'm going back to Tampa.
Oh, he'll win his cup in Nashville. It'll be good.
Ooh, hot takes. Yoki, are you hot takes here with Duffer? I love it.
Henry.
Okay, Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, I mean, really, it comes down to Gensel for Stamkos at this point, right?
They lost quite a bit, right? Stamkos.
Did they?
Stamkos still had 40 goals last year.
Right. But Gensel's going to be playing with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov potentially. It's the best line in hockey, right?
I'd like to think that the best line in hockey is the one Connor McDavid is on, but it's close, yes. So I think Kucherov last year...
Let's not forget, McDavid didn't win the MVP, right? And
Kucherov did something...
It was a three-way race where anybody could have won the... So you have to be careful when you phrase it this way, like, because Braden Point's one of the top six goal scorers in the league the last... you know, handful of years.
This is the trick question again. You know, when you play Jeopardy and it says, this player led the Tampa Bay Lightning in goals in the 2023-24 season. Oh. And like, it's going to be, who's Steven Stamkos? And who's Nikita Kucherov? And it's Braden Point. This year, he had 46 goals. Kucherov had 44.
Yeah, but he had 50 prior to that. 40.
I know, exactly. But that's the thing when I think I fell into the trap, and a lot of people make that mistake, is... Oh, Braden Point, first-line center? Yeah, Braden Point is a first-line center in the National Hockey League and one of the best at that, and has always performed and always been kind of under the radar because you have Kucherov and because you have Hedman and because you had Stamkos and because you have Vasilevsky and because you had Sergachev signing the big deal. Now, Sergachev is gone. He's in Utah. But there's always been that Braden Point is not as good as his stats shown, but Braden Point is as good, even better than his stats have shown over the past few years.
So last year with Stamkos having another very good year, the Lightning were 3.5 goals a game. That was fifth best. They were number one on the power play. And I think a lot of people are going to focus on that aspect of it.
Yep.
Recognizing that Jake Gensel is probably very worthy of the deal that he got. He is younger than Stamkos, so perhaps it makes sense that way as well. But will the power play be able to maintain its lofty status without Steven Stamkos?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because if you think of the power play with the Tampa Bay Lightning, you're thinking Steven Stamkos on the left flank with the power play one-timer. And he did have 19 power play goals last year. Out of his 40, 19 of them were on the power play. Braden Point at 15 and Kucherov was on the other side, the right flank as the lefty. He had 13 power play goals. So is Gensel the same fit as Steven Stamkos? Absolutely not. But the power play with the Tampa Bay Lightning, they were first last year because they were very diversified. They had different options. They had Point in the bumper, Kucherov on the right flank, Stamkos on the left. They had the point shot from Hedman or whoever you want to put up there. That's what makes the power play good. Yes, Stamkos had 19 power play goals, but I think that power play in Tampa is still a very dangerous power play. And you know, Duffer, I have not been really high on Tampa going into this offseason because I think Toronto, Florida are the top two in the Atlantic. I think Boston and Tampa are going to take a step back to allow teams like Buffalo, Detroit, Ottawa to maybe say, hey, we can be third in the division. We can be fourth in the division. Potentially, we'll have five Atlantic Division teams make the playoffs next year. So I think it opens the door. But when I did my homework on the Tampa Bay Lightning last night, this morning, and I kept going over the numbers, I'm like, damn, Lightning are still good. The Lightning is still a top team in the Atlantic Division. So now I say Toronto, Florida, top two, Tampa is three. Like, they are very much in their own category. After that, I think it's Boston and the rest, but the Tampa Bay Lightning are still really good.
I'm concerned about their bottom six. But they've been able to live this way for such a long time. Now, granted, we segued with Ross Colton earlier. We know where the remnants of the champs have ended up, right? Palat is in New Jersey. Killorn is in Anaheim.
Yes.
Seattle has Yanni Gourde, right? Mm-hmm. And Tyler Johnson's on a PTO in Boston. But you know
That's
what I mean?
Pittsburgh had to do with Phil Kessel and Bonino and those guys, and they go.
This is why... even with a number one power play, and even with a top five penalty kill, and with a fifth best offense overall, this is part of the reason why they got bounced in five games by eventual Stanley Cup champion Florida last year. Yep. Is they nothing like I like Nick Paul a lot. He's incredibly versatile, but I feel like if you're stacking it up this way, I don't like Nick Paul's scenario to start the year. Like, I love it for Nick when he moves up into the top six and it's like, wow, look at watch this guy play. Now, if they give Cam Atkinson an opportunity to play in the top six, okay, that's cool. But like Connor Sherry, Nick Paul,
Michael
Asimon on the right side, Gergensen's Glenn Denning, Mitchell Chafee, among others. Now, the wild card in all of this, of course, is, and I don't imagine it's going to happen, he would be fresh out of junior, even as a first rounder a couple of years ago. But Connor Geeky at some point is going to have an opportunity here, right?
Yep.
Does it happen right away? I don't know. But I am concerned that their bottom six isn't going to give them nearly enough. However,
yeah, the same way I was concerned without Vasilevsky last year, and all of a sudden Jonas Johansson comes in and is like, they start 9-6-5. Now you put that together, it's 9-11, but it's still plus +3.
Yeah.
Right. And they were able to do it. I think Tampa is strong enough in their top six that they'll be able to balance the lackluster bottom six that they have. Now, the defense is a big question mark because you reacquire Ryan McDonagh, you move on from Mikhail Sergachev. You're hoping that Hedman, Chernak, McDonagh, and Radish or Moser.
Yeah. AJ Moser, if some of the depth charts are correct, I think the Moser Chernak pairing has really good potential. And in that scenario, you can still separate Hedman and McDonagh. And I think then you have a presence on all three pairs, which is pretty good, which gets us to the point of even if your bottom six is average at best, and I'm not sure it's average, what number, what will the number look like for the Lightning goals against average at the end of this year? Because this year it was 3.26, which ranked 22nd in the NHL.
Yes. So it was 3.60 before Vasilevsky's return. So Vasi came back at American Thanksgiving. So before that, it was 3.60. They were giving up more goals than they were scoring. Even though they were scoring 3.5 goals a game, they were giving up 3.6 a game. When Vasi returned, he didn't play every single game. That dropped down to 3.15. I think a healthy Andrei Vasilevsky, his number himself, should be in the 2.6 range. It was 2.9 last year, 2.90. So, and he only had a 900 save percentage. If he's at 915, which is 917 is his career average, I think it's down to 2.5, 2.6. I think Tampa can stay. Jonas Johansson is going to be in the 3 range. You're at 2.75 as a team. That's a really, really solid number. That puts you top 10 in the NHL at the end of the day.
I don't think they're getting all the way down to 2.7. I think they can easily live if they chop it from 3.2 to 2.95. And, you know, because again, if the offense holds up, and even it, I think, will come down a little bit. I think they're good. I don't think they're great, but I think they're really good, and I think they're a playoff team. Man, I think it makes it that much harder for everybody. Like I think
it was 12 teams last year, Duffer. 12 teams that had a goals against average under 3 last year. Only 12 teams. Even if they went from, like you said,
including Buffalo.
Was that?
Including
Sabres
Buffalo.
Were 296, tied with Vegas in the top 12. Were the 11th and 12th team.
Like, third of a goal per game better than the Lightning.
Yeah, absolutely. So even if the Lightning dropped to 299, you know, I think it could go down to 275, 280. But if they drop to 299, they're still top 12 in the NHL instead of being 22nd. They're still going to score with Kucherov and Point and, you know, Gensel and
Hagel, Cirelli.
They're still going to be top 10 in scoring, at the very least top 10. So you're still good.
So 7 straight years in the playoffs, 10 of 11 years under John Cooper, who has a career points percentage of 640. He has two cup wins, two cup losses, two conference final losses, and this is the number. 150 playoff games under John Cooper. The next closest team in this window of time is the Rangers at 107. It's not even close how the Lightning have been the model franchise of the NHL for a decade. It is like the Rangers 107, Boston 105, Dallas 104, Pittsburgh 100. Those are the only other teams to play 100 playoff games. The Lightning have played 150. Yep. It's absolutely insane. But it doesn't have Stamkos anymore.
This is John Cooper's last contract, like last year of his contract. He signed a 3-year extension after the 21 season. So 24-25 is the last year of his deal as well. Does he want to continue with Tampa after this year? Does he want to go try something else? I feel like John Cooper and Tampa, they're together. They are going to stick together. But sometimes coaches want a new challenge and they say, I'm moving on. You're right. No, Steven Stamkos is a big difference in Tampa for sure.
All right. Quick wrap. More birthdays? Yeah, probably. It's all ahead here on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres prospects will hit the ice this afternoon as part of the Prospects Challenge build-up. They'll practice again tomorrow. And, of course, the games begin on Friday. We look at Columbus being the first opponent. That's Friday night at 7 p.m. Sabres will play again at 7, Marty, on Saturday. And, of course, they will wrap up the challenge on Monday late afternoon, 5 o'clock start over at Harbor Center against the Penguins. So the one thing that is always, top of mind, obviously, at this point in time, as we look at these careers that are beginning for many with their respective NHL organizations. You were in training camp mode 23 years ago today, September 11th. Yeah.
I was actually in the training room on the table doing my EKG where they put the suction cups on you and they check your heart rate and everything and then probably failed that test because somebody ran in and said, hey, there's something going on in New York City and a plane hit the World Trade Center. This is me in 2001. I didn't know what the World Trade Center was. I knew the Twin Towers, but I didn't know that was the World Trade Center. So I'm like, what? Like what? And then they put the TV on and you can see it. We were the first game to be played in Manhattan, first professional event to be played in Manhattan as we played the opening game in New York at MSG that year, wearing the New York jerseys. We didn't have the goat head. We, you know, the Rangers always have Rangers spelled out in the front of their jerseys. So we had New York, both teams, Mark Messier wearing the fireman hat of Chief Downey, which was missing at the time. He ended up, not surviving the attacks, but he went in, which was very, very emotional. James Patrick was a player on the team. He had a lot of friends in the NYFD and NYPD, FDNY and NYPD that we got to meet the families and some of the families of fire department people or police officer that had perished in that day. So it was definitely a heavy month. For a lot of people and a lot of people connected with the New York people in Manhattan.
Ace Bailey and Mark Babis, the NHL names that get honored the most, as they should on this day, as they perished in those in the plane crash into the tower. And you know, it really is hard just to. The further you get from the actual date to try to put it all into perspective, isn't it?
Yeah. I went back last year and watched a little bit of the CNN coverage from that day and how, like, it's a dream. It's not really happening, right? And still 23 years later, it's the same way.
Never forget. And we will see you tomorrow on Sabres.